Warning: this program contains content that may not be suitable to some listeners. It contains decency, truth, ageless wisdom, a father who cares. It's Generations with Kevin Swanson.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Generations. My name is Kevin Swanson. I'm Executive Director of Christian Home Educators. I'm a pastor. But the reason I'm here today, I'm a father of five. I'm raising five children at a time where our world is coming apart. 36% of children are born without fathers. Half of marriages end in divorce. And yet, everybody says the sky is falling. Yes, the sky, or at least the ozone layer. Every time my alarm clock goes off in the morning, the sun rises. I want to be sure that I never forget to set my alarm clock, because we need the sun to rise every day to keep us warm. Ladies and gentlemen, that's known as a false cause logical fallacy, and science is filled with them. Well, today we're going to talk about the environment. And, you know, there are some Christian environmentalists out there today that are encouraging you to get a moped. For Pete's sake, get a moped. Get rid of your pickup truck. Hey, Dave, we've heard this one before. Global warming is brought on by increased CO2 levels, and the sky is falling. The sky is falling. It's time to get a moped. Everybody get a moped. Get a moped now. They talked about it in Kyoto. Now we got to get a moped. Well, the CO2 levels are up. There's no question about that. We've measured it in a few places and found that it is up a bit over the last 40 years or so of industry in the Western world. But the question is this: have the increased CO2 levels affected weather patterns and global warming? You see, just as I led off at the beginning, that my alarm clock causes the sun to rise, that's a logical fallacy. Okay, the alarm clock increases, and at the same time the sun is rising, but the question is, does my alarm clock going off cause the sun to rise? Okay, they're happening at the same time, but does one cause the other? And that's the big question. That's the really, really big question. Do the CO2 levels increase global warming? Do they cause global warming? And 1,000 egghead scientists aren't going to be able to answer that question without falling into false cause fallacies, confounded factors. It's just a big mess. What they forget is that changes in ocean temperatures and currents, volcanic eruptions, solar storms, cyclical movements of the sun and moon are far, 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 far more likely to affect global temperatures. In fact, Mount St. Helens dumped 910,000 metric tons of CO2, 220,000 metric tons of sulfur dioxide, and unknown amounts of aerosols into the atmosphere. Put a filter on that thing! Somebody should have put a filter on that thing, Dave! The eruption displaced 4 billion tons of Earth and erupted with a force of more than 500 atomic bombs. I mean, 250 times the force of what happened in Hiroshima. And that was God. Here's another very, very interesting fact about global warming, and that is only a couple of a percent of increased cloud cover would offset warming effects of a doubling of atmospheric carbon dioxide from fossil fuel use. A doubling, Dave. You double CO2, all right? And we haven't even done that. It's an increase of maybe 5-10% over the last 40 years. But you double it. And just a couple of percent of cloud cover, which is controlled by God himself. I mean, there isn't yet a scientist who controls cloud cover that I know of. Oh, except for the guy who ran for president. Who's he?
Al Gore?
Al Gore. Al Gore, I think he controls cloud cover, doesn't he?
He's got Earth in the balance.
Yeah, he's got Earth in the balance, and he's controlling a lot of things. But I'm not sure he controls cloud cover. But God controls cloud cover, and only a couple percent of increased cloud cover would offset any warming effects from doubling the CO2 effects from American and other Western countries' industrial use.
So we don't know what caused the CO2 increase. But we aren't even sure if it's good or bad yet.
We don't even know if it's good or bad. We don't even know if it's what's contributing to global warming. In fact, the Earth shifts in its position relative to the sun. And solar storms on the surface of the sun produce variable temperatures, radically varying temperatures. So my point is very simply this, Dave. If God took his little finger and flicked the sun just a little tiny bit, we wouldn't be worried about a 0.6 degree centigrade shift over 100 years. We'd be looking at a 60 degree shift over 2 years, and you better go get some serious suntan lotion. God is in
control. And of course, all of this stuff is presupposition ridden. How much CO2 increases contribute to the warming versus thousands of other factors out there? How fragile or resilient is the Earth? Nobody even knows these questions. So your worldview is vitally important when you get involved in the areas of environmental science. Guess what? Worldview is key. The worldview of the scientists is absolutely important. The question is, can scientists really predict what will happen in the future? And should scientists deny God's absolute sovereignty? Fundamentally, when you deny God's revealed word, God's ethics, God's ultimate control, if that's your worldview and you're going to get out there and make decisions in science or politics, I'm not trusting you. Your worldview is important. Do you start with a recognition of God's existence, a recognition that God created the earth? A recognition that God is in total providential sovereign control over this world. Do you trust in God's law as the right way to handle the world that he made? Was God smart enough? Was he smart enough to figure out how to run this world and then give us his revelation in his word called a law? Was he smart enough to give us the right law to handle his world? Or is everything out of God's control? That's the assumption of all of the guys that gathered at Kyoto and told us how to clean up the environment. They denied God's sovereignty. They denied his word. They denied his law. That's his worldview. We are just cosmic dust trying to figure out how to run a little globe in the middle of a very big universe. And this goes for evangelicals, too, whose theology does not allow for God to reveal his law. They don't trust that God has an absolute sovereign hand over this earth and will not let man destroy it. They do not trust that God has a revelation that is sufficient to predict all of the possible ways that man could screw up life on planet Earth and that God could present a system of ethics that could keep everything under control. They're assuming that God's law is insufficient. There is a lack of faith in God. There is a lack of interest in God's law as a standard of ethics. And there is the ever-present desire in the hearts of men to be as God. Ever since the garden, men have wanted to be as God. And they still do. Out in Kyoto, they want absolute sovereign control over their environment. And they typically do it by tyrannical government. That's the agenda, to be as God. Ever since we were in the garden. Today, we are going to talk with E. Calvin Beisner about what is going on with modern evangelicals and why they are buying into the wrong worldview, especially as pertaining to the environmental plan concocted in Kyoto several years ago. We'll be back with E. Calvin Beisner. Dr. Beisner is next on Generations. Stay with us.
Fasten your seatbelt. Hang on to your hat. Generations will be right back.
Folks, we're back. This is Kevin Swanson. The program is Generations Today, where we look at the world through the eyeglasses of a biblical worldview. And today, on air with me is E. Calvin Beisner. He is Associate Professor of Social Ethics at Knox Theological Seminary, a founding member of the Interfaith Stewardship Alliance. He has written 11 books on the Christian worldview, economics, and the environment. Dr. Beisner, welcome to Generations.
Thank you very much, Kevin.
Thanks for joining us today. Dr. Beisner, natural disasters, volcanoes, a really big flood in the history of the world. There have been a lot of environmental catastrophes since the beginning of time. But let's begin from a biblical perspective as we look at the environment. What do we say about God's hand upon the environment as Christians?
Well, I think the first thing that we can say is that we serve and love a wise and powerful creator. And one of the things that we need to keep in mind about his wisdom is simply that just as we would not expect a good engineer to build a building that is extremely fragile and will collapse at the failure of the least small part of it, so we wouldn't expect something like that to be the work of our creator. And what we should expect from a wise designer like God is an earth that has tremendous resilience, tremendous recovery capacity, tremendous capacity for positive and negative feedback mechanisms to balance the various different things that we might do to the earth. And that is, in fact, what time has demonstrated again and again. I mean, in the Ice Age, most of the northern hemisphere, the land down to a latitude equivalent to the location of, say, San Francisco, under about 2 miles thick sheet of ice. There wasn't any habitat under that. And now, of course, we have beautiful forests all over the place and fields and so on. We have livable cities and the like. So the Earth is capable of recovering from disasters that are far beyond anything that we have ever witnessed.
And that is because God's hand is on this earth. This is his earth. He made it for us. He made it for his glory, didn't he?
Yes. And we don't want, of course, then to jump from, well, the earth can recover from great disasters, to, therefore, we needn't bother whether we make great disasters. That isn't the idea at all. We still have a responsibility as stewards to God to use the earth, to manage the earth, to cultivate and guard the earth as he instructs us to do. To do it in a wise and a righteous way, a way that enhances its productivity, that enhances its beauty, that enhances its reflection of the glory of its creator.
Dr. Beisner, I want to turn our attention to the CO2 problem and the potential degradation of the ozone layer and what some people say is global warming that results from that. Exactly what is it that we have done wrong in the technological age? What bad things have been the result of these increased CO2 levels produced by automobiles and factories and everything else? Can you name a bad thing? Can anybody out there name a bad thing? Or are they prophetic enough to be able to look into the future and say, this definitively is a bad thing?
Well, theoretically, as the concentration of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere rises, the solar energy that is trapped within the atmosphere rather than reflecting back out into space is going to rise because carbon dioxide allows solar energy in, but it traps solar energy as it heads back out. So theoretically, of course, the more CO2 you've got in the atmosphere, the higher the temperature is going to be because you're trapping more solar energy. The problem is that there are lots and lots of positive and negative feedback mechanisms that also play a role in the overall temperature of the Earth's atmosphere. And as a matter of fact, CO2 is only a trace element in our atmosphere. The most important, overwhelmingly most important greenhouse gas in the atmosphere is water vapor, which traps far more energy than does CO2. And as CO2 levels and other greenhouse gas levels change, things like cloudiness change, things like weather patterns change, and plant growth changes. And as a result, you don't have just a straight line correlation between CO2 level and temperature level. As a matter of fact, a number of different scientists, a fellow named Essenhigh just a few years ago had an interesting article published in Science magazine in which he is arguing, as have others, that the actual temperature record indicates that temperature leads CO2 rather than CO2 leading temperature. At any rate, as far as empirical observation is concerned, we haven't been able to notice any damage done by rising CO2 levels in our atmosphere. And in fact, probably instead, there's a great deal of benefit to be seen from it, partly in that if it is raising temperatures, it's doing so quite moderately, well within the range of natural variation over known history, and that moderate rise in temperature is actually beneficial to agriculture and to all plants and living things that depend on plants. But second, because CO2 itself is a necessary component in the process by which plants turn sunlight and water into plant fiber. Photosynthesis depends on CO2. With every doubling of CO2 concentration, you get about a 35% increase in plant growth efficiency, which leads ultimately through a long process to the fact that many economists estimate that about 10% of the increase in crop yields that we've experienced over the last 60 years in the Earth is attributable not to human intentional fertilizing or use of pesticides or anything like that, but rather to the natural fertilizing effect of higher CO2 levels in the atmosphere.
Dr. Beisner, it is mind-boggling to me that one cannot categorically say that the increased CO2 levels have produced negative consequences or will produce negative consequences, especially when you consider that there are many positive consequences that could result from the increased CO2 levels. But ultimately, what is the agenda here? There's got to be something happening in Kyoto that is connected to a different agenda. They're not just in this to clean up the environment, are they?
Well, I think, really, to be fair, we need to recognize that the agenda differs from person to person involved in all of this conversation. I think probably most Americans, believing what they read in the mass media, think that global warming is not only real but also likely to be catastrophic. They think that it is driven by rising CO2, which is driven by human activity. And they think that the best way to prevent that is to restrict CO2 emissions, and that doing so will, on the whole, have better, it would be more beneficial than harmful to us. I don't doubt the good motives of most people who think about this, including an awful lot of the people in the, environmental movement. For example, the people in the Evangelical Environmental Network, which promoted the Evangelical Climate Initiative that was signed by 86 leading evangelicals a few weeks ago. I'm quite satisfied that their motives are very good. There are, however, also within the environmental movement as a whole and in the global political community dealing with this, especially among those associated with the Kyoto Protocol process and with the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, there are many people who see Kyoto not so much as a means of trying to prevent global warming as it is instead a means of, as one European Union leader put it, leveling the technological and economic playing field between Europe and the United States. In other words, it's about trying to equalize economies more.
It's a worldview issue, and as in anything, neutrality is impossible.
Yes.
The Kyoto Climate Treaty, I think, is an attempt to impose massive government controls on industry. Let's talk about the way Christians ought to treat God's world about them. God gives us some property to take care of. Obviously, the solution is not to turn it over to the state, but it is to take good care of it. What is the Christian obligation in relation to God's green earth?
We need to look, I think, at two different passages in Genesis quickly. One is Genesis 1:28, where we read that God blessed Adam and Eve and said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply, fill up the earth, subdue it, and rule over it. Have dominion over the fish of the sea, the birds of the air, things that creep on the earth." That is everything. We are to fill, subdue, and rule the earth. And then in Genesis chapter 2, verse 15, we read that having placed Adam in the garden, which is not the entire planet, it's just one spot, one location, having placed Adam in the garden, he told Adam to cultivate and guard the garden, which implies that apart from his guarding it, the rest of the earth would encroach on it, right? The aim of the mandate in Genesis 1:28 is for Adam to, through multiplication, move out and fill the entire planet and turn it all into garden by subduing it and ruling over it. The aim in 2:15 is to cultivate and guard that which has been gardenified, so to speak. And so cultivating and guarding means that we are, A, to make it as fruitful as we can, to try to make it return as much return on God's investment in it as we can make it, and then we are to guard it. We're to try to protect it against harm. So if we can keep those basic principles in mind, distinguish earth from garden, recognize that we are to subdue and rule the earth, that the aim of that subduing and ruling is to turn it into garden so that we can cultivate and guard it, then I think that's a good guide. And then finally, we look at the fact that God has given us the pattern for that in his own creative activity. We learn in Genesis 1 that God is creative, that he is productive, and that he is also moral about it. We get his moral judgments again and again. He saw that it was good. And so we are to do our filling, our ruling, our subduing, our cultivating, our guarding, according to God's standards of wisdom and righteousness revealed to us in Scripture.
Very well said. Thank you so much. I realize this has been a brief interview, but a lot of wisdom flowing today. Thank you so much, Dr. Beisner, for joining us on Generations.
Well, thank you, Kevin, and I hope that our listeners might be able to visit our website for the Interfaith Stewardship Alliance, interfaithstewardship.org.
Folks, that's interfaithstewardship.org on the web, interfaithstewardship.org. Dave, I guess the moral of the story on today's program is Earth's not a mother. It's just a big rock. But God is our Father, and we really ought to fear Him and keep His commandments and take good care of the rock that He gave us. Ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to Generations. My name is Kevin Swanson, and we provide a free news magazine subscription to anybody who clicks on the right click on KevinSwanson.com. So sign yourself up to our news magazine. It goes out quarterly. It's a beautiful four-color magazine that you will enjoy with your whole family. It's called The Homeschool Update, and you can get this magazine by going to KevinSwanson.com and just click on Free News Magazine. You can interact with this program by emailing me, kevin@check.org. That's kevin@check.org. And you can hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world, at kevinswanson.com. Get your friends and family members listening to us in Zimbabwe and Zambia at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we lay down a vision for the next generation.
You have been listening to Generations with Kevin Swanson, where we take a look at life through a biblical worldview and a generational focus. If you've been challenged by this program, you need to get a copy of Kevin Swanson's new book, Upgrade, The 10 Secrets to the Best Education for Your Child. Get an upgrade at kevinswanson.com.